Okay. This is the informal meeting for September 13th, 2021. And we are in the midst of a slight experiment where we are, you might want to put that on gallery so everybody can see it. A hybrid combination of Zoom and in person. Let me announce though, until January, which is, we're allowed to run completely on Zoom until January, which is what we probably will do. But this is to introduce our little friend, the owl, sitting in the room. And it will pick up everybody, and theoretically we'll be able to hear, hear everyone. Okay, let's begin. Copies of the draft minute, oh, sorry.
Recording in progress.
Good Lord. Let's do a roll call just to make sure we have everybody accounted for. I'm trying to remember alphabetically here.
Tiffany.
All right, Tiffany Garriga, are you here? I don't see her on the Zoom call. I'm not sure what that was, but Eileen Halloran?
Here.
There we go. How about Dominic Moranti?
Here.
Okay. I'll just go around there. Ryan Wallace?
Here.
Shersha Mizan?
Here.
Duan Sarawar?
Here.
Jane Trombley?
Here.
John Rosenthal?
Here.
Malachi Walker?
Here.
Rebecca Wolf?
Here.
Okay. Is there anybody I missed? No. Me. I'm here. Okay. Copies of reports received. Shaheem, is it picking up my sound okay? Okay, good. Copies of reports received are on the aldermen's desks. We also have three communications in relation to the good cause eviction. And now we will begin with the department reports. I don't see fire on here, so we'll move to, and I don't see seniors, but you know, Shaheem, they may have gone to the wrong link. Is there a way to figure that out? Oh boy. Okay, there's Heather. Okay, let's go with youth first, since they're here and ready to roll. Chief, could you mute yourself for now? Because you're. Thank you. Okay, Liz, you might want to get a little closer so make sure it picks you up, the sound. And talk nice and loud.
Hey, everyone. As I know, the DEC came Also, there's a new sign at the trailhead at Oakdale. The whole project was coordinated by Friends of Hudson Youth and Friends of Oakdale Lake. This project was in the works before I started, so there's a lot of people that I knew about that deserve some credit. Piper Ulf and Caitlin Winner helped design it. We got a grant from the Columbia Land Conservancy Trust, and then DPW helped us put up the sign, so it's like an all-around communal event, which is really cool. Beautiful sign, and if you haven't gone for a hike in a while, it'd be nice to go check out that sign on the trails. For fall program, there's also an attachment here. I feel like that is outlining what the programming is going to be. We kind of delayed coming out with this a little bit. We wanted to make sure we had all the information, knew what was going on with other programs, knew what the school's plan was. We were going to try to do two separate locations through November while the weather permits and have our younger kids at Oakdale continue outdoor programming, have that space. I mean, it's an amazing, beautiful space. We're going to try and utilize it a little bit longer. That'll also give us the opportunity to have the older kids come into the youth center a little earlier while minimizing the amount of kids we're all together at the same time. So we're pretty excited about trying this out. If it goes well, we're going to consider doing it beyond just COVID times. Maybe see if we can keep kids outside longer on a regular basis. We're going to try to do a little bit of a pod system. We were really lucky with the pod system this summer that we had done it so that when we did have a COVID exposure, it wasn't for all the kids. It was just a minimum group. And so we feel really good about moving forward with that. And we do have some COVID guidelines about all our staff are going to wear masks regardless of their vaccination status. The kids inside are going to need to wear masks as well. And outside, if we're all sitting together at home or adult time, we'll probably all have masks on as well. So the staff will always need masks. And we have masks available for the kids as well when they show up. And that starts next Monday. So with that, we don't have as many kids signed up as we want. We did kind of delay getting that out. So we are going to do some community outreach later in the week. We're going to go down, I think, to the higher ed is where we're going to go and set up a table and greet kids and parents after school and try and get some kids signed up for after school programming. And if they're not signed up in time, that's fine. We're still going to accept applications. We just want to make sure that everybody eventually is registered who's showing up. At that same time, we'll do some outreach for fall soccer signups. We've gotten a fair amount of kids signed up for that, so we're still hoping to get a few more. That starts next Saturday at Green Park Park. We talked about that last time. I just wanted to remind everyone in case you don't want to signed up yet. We're also hiring for rec attendants for the fall. We've got our permanent part-time rec attendants that are going to be the main core of our staff, and we've got a few shifts that need to be covered, so we've actually had a fair number of applicants. We did a couple interviews today, and the interviews went really well, and we're hopeful by the end of the week that we've got most, if not all, of our positions filled. And then the last thing on my agenda is the landscape at Oakdale is going to look a little different. We're going to start prepping some of the areas for wildflower planting, which you have to do shortly before the frost. You have to wait for the ground to cool down a little bit or else the seeds won't take properly. In order to get the space prepared, we kind of have to kill the grasses there. So it's going to look like something terrible has happened and no one's taking care of it, but it's just a transformation, you know. Things get a little bit worse before they get better once the beauty's going to come and we just have the vacation. So
that's the priorities.
We're still waiting on the permits to go through for that. So yes, it's not in the fall and hopefully in the spring.
Cool.
And we did work with DPW and New York Digs to make sure that we could do some planting there. So we've got that all covered. And we're also going to do some bulbs as well. We're going to try and do that as programming with the kids so that we can put the stuff in in the fall and it's much in the spring. So we get nice, like, develop. For those of you that are here, there's one more attachment in your packet. Last time I talked about the trainings and the way they're supporting our staff in the summer program, and the feedback we got was that the best training they got was on feedback. They hadn't learned, a lot of them, before that they could communicate that way with each other, that they could support each other by suggesting ways that they can grow and improve. And I just wanted to share that with you to know if that's what the kids that are working for us are working on professionally and personally.
Thank you. Any questions from the council?
Well, the other one I've got, I saw you've got cold weather clothing dropping there too. Just keep us posted on how many kids and whatnot, because we can pool resources and figure out how to get the resources we need.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the one thing, if you guys haven't read it, we're a little concerned about getting cold at Oakdale and just findings, parents and guardians, that cold weather gear is going to be important, and just having them reach out if that's an issue, if they're going to need support, we're going to make sure that everybody's clothed appropriately.
Any other council members?
Nothing.
Jane.
I just want to thank you for you always give very comprehensive reports, and it's appreciated, so thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I don't see any hands up.
Barely hear her.
Well.
I do have one hand up for you as well. Everything that I did say, if you didn't quite catch it, I think will be with your papers. And I'm more than open to answering questions outside of here as well if you have any after you've read it.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I don't see any hands up or... We can move along. Robin Waters, excuse me, is up next and with her report on seniors. Robin, are you there? You're muted if you...
I'm here.
Okay. Take it away.
Seems to be a little bit of an echo. I guess that's okay. Let me know if there's any trouble hearing me. What was that?
I'm on mute, so it's not from... No, I was talking to Ryan. Go ahead.
Okay. So we're in the, as you all know, we are now our own department, and we're in the middle of the hiring process. So the postings are being finished up. Michael Hoffman is very, very helpful with that, and the process of reaching out to civil service and getting approved by the union and all of that. So those will be going up shortly. And so programming has been a little bit on hold until that happens. And then we're hoping to open the senior center once we have the staff in place. And I wanted to point out about the emergency rental assistance program that the Hudson Catskill Housing Authority is working on. As an important resource for seniors who might be having issues paying their rent during this time. So I want to encourage people to reach out to the Hudson Catskill Housing Authority with any issues regarding that, because they have quite a bit of information on the Emergency Rental Assistance Program. And going forward, in terms of studying the agenda for the Department of Senior Services, we have established a steering committee to be part of the vision for the center and the department. So the goal is for them to meet on a monthly basis as we develop the department. So kind of still in process. It's kind of a big undertaking getting the department going. So that's where we're at now. I don't know if anyone has any questions for me or...
Okay, councilmen and women, do you have any questions for Robin?
Yeah.
Malachi, speak.
All right.
Oh.
I know what the...
Malachi actually was...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Malachi. Nice and loudly.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah,
good,
question,
thank you.
Yeah, my question was just for the hiring. How many are you looking for? How many people are you looking for? Full-time.
Well, in our budget, we just have funding for one full-time person.
Okay.
And then a part-time cleaner.
Okay.
Tiffany, did you have a question?
Yes. My question is, how many seniors are you currently working with?
Well, right now the ongoing programs are the virtual yoga that started March of 2020 and the waterfront aerobics. So there's between 25-30 at the waterfront aerobics and about, it depends on the numbers with the virtual, but they average between 15 and 20 each day. So anywhere between 40 and 60 days.
Do you know if any seniors have been able to actually go onto the waterfront to participate in person?
For the waterfront aerobics or for what part?
Yeah, for the waterfront aerobics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in terms of one thing we're working on with both the farmers market and some of the different waterfront organizers for events is getting busing to go down directly from Providence Hall, those towers down to the waterfront.
Yeah, that was going to be my next comment. Is, I would like to work with you on transportation.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to work with you on that.
Thank you. Well, let's get in touch tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Questions? Comments? Okay, thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Next up is Heather with the finance report.
Howdy. So I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen.
Okay. Really, but
no.
That's still not gonna work.
I can see it.
Yeah, the people on Zoom can see it. Could you make it a little bigger so it fits the screen or in
200%?
No, that's too big.
It's a little bit better.
Line
it up
now. Okay. Now I can't see it.
Yeah, now it's too big.
I know, I'm trying to find a balance here.
Okay.
Try 150.
I'm gonna
try
150.
There we go.
Let's try 180 and see if that satisfies everybody.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, Tiffany, can you see that? I can see it online.
Yep.
Okay, perfect.
We're good.
Okay. 180 is the perfect number for future presenters. So first thing, just an update about ARPA. We talked a lot about this last month, so I'm not going to go into all that detail again. But the one interesting fact is that there were some governments that either didn't request or declined their ARPA funds. And according to the law, they get reallocated to all the eligible NEU recipients, of which we are one. So it's not a lot, but everything counts. So we're going to get an additional $2,532.28 and get the first tranche of half of that basically now, and the second half with the second tranche in summer of 2022.
Okay.
So that's a little bit of good news. We talked about the lost revenue formula, and as a reminder, this is a formula that was determined by the Treasury, U.S. Treasury, to help local governments determine how much, if any, of their ARPA funds could be used basically to offset expenses in the budget and the based on lost revenue during COVID. And I have all the info here. You may not want to go through detail, but I did the calculations, and it's you had to look at 4 years of calculations.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, let me just try and make this a little bit smaller, so maybe we can get.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a little better.
Yep.
So you have to look at the past 4 years of all of your revenue sources, which are all there for your perusal. I'm happy to go into any more detail if you want, but the key things are down here at the bottom, because you have to look at all of the revenue sources across all of the funds, not just the general fund, but then they have some exceptions to be backed out. So anything having to do with the water supply system got backed out, but not sewer. Any proceeds from the issuance of debt, which we had done in 2016,
mm-hmm.
and refunds and other correcting transactions for some reason. So, as you can see, based on our actual revenues, we had 3.6% gain in this year, 2.4% this year, and 4.4% this year. That averages out to a 3.4% increase over that period of time. We are allowed to either use our actual number or 4.1%, which is what the Treasury determined, and we're allowed to use the greater of that, so obviously we're going to use the 4.1%. So that basically says that if we had achieved a 4.1% growth increase across those last years, our revenue would have come in, with the exceptions I noted, at 13.372 million, and the actuals came in up here at 12.728 million, which means our revenue reduction was just under $644,000. Our adjusted ARPA award was 622,767, which means that means basically all of the ARPA funds can be used to help offset budget expenses.
Excellent.
So I think that's really good news as well.
Yep.
Any questions on either of those before I go forward?
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So, still in the middle of the audit, we got a little delayed, so we haven't had our on-site presentation yet. Our on-site, them being on-site in order to do some sampling of things. But we are looking at targeting that in the not too distant future. I have no doubt that it will be completed well within the time frame that we need to in order to meet the muni market deadlines that we are committed to. Resolutions that you will see tonight, just to give you a quick top line of them. So you're going to see a transfer in the legal funds from personal services to attorney fees, and that's basically because at one point when we were bringing in the multiple attorneys to focus on specific things, there was the thought that they could all be paid as employees. It turns out that is not the case, so they're all being paid correctly and have been since the beginning of the year paid against the attorney fees line. So all this does is take the money that was originally budgeted in the personal services line and moves it to attorney fees, so that would in the correct account when we have enough funds to cover them. The second one is also, I don't want to say housekeeping, but it's kind of housekeeping. We're just transferring some funds from the regular hospitalization line, which is where all of our health insurance policy expenses get charged, to the HR refunding line, which is the line which funds all of the employees under MVP, their high deductible plan that the city covers in full. There has been quite a bit more use of the HRA funds than in prior years, so we're just moving some money from the regular hospitalization to HRA. The third is just related to the transfer of the code enforcement office moving. You all approved the lease, but there are other expenses, moving expenses, getting the telecom stuff set up and so forth, and some furniture requirements. So that is for that. The plus on that side is that actually when the lease was approved, the amount that was approved was for the full year's lease, but that obviously is not the amount of money that we need in 2021, because the lease is going to continue on to 2022, so there's money left in that can be moved over just to cover these other expenses. The fourth one is an agreement to join the Public Employer Risk Management Association, or IEPIRMA, and basically we get our workers' comp coverage through the county. The county has changed who they use as their major source of risk management for workers' compensation to PIRMA. And technically, in order for us to continue with the county, as well as every other town and village that participates with the county, we just have to, as a municipality, join PIRMA. So that's pretty straightforward. And the fifth one is also very straightforward.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Eileen.
No, that was an aside. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem. And then the last one is also very straightforward. It's a transfer resolution to cover an insurance settlement. It was a trip and fall that was settled, and the city's deductible is $5,000. We generally don't budget for those until they come available. So that's just moving money into the correct line for judgments and settlements so that we can pay that bill. Any questions on those before I go forward?
I don't see any.
Great. Okay. I actually have a brief update on this. It says pending quote from our labor attorney, but we did get a quote later this afternoon. And this is just to put together a proposed accrual policy that we've talked about before, and it's part of our review from OSC last year that we should have a policy in place. And the only thing is now I have to reach out to a second attorney, because even though it will probably be well under $1,000, there's technically no, there are expense limitations for purchasing of things, but there aren't any for professional services. So that may be something we want to consider modifying in the procurement policy. And I'd be happy to work with anybody on that if anybody's interested in doing that. Okay, great. And I also note that technically the procurement policy is supposed to be, it's supposed to be adopted by the council every year. So I happen to notice that when I was reviewing it again, so you may want to put that on your calendar. I believe it says as close after the organizational meeting as possible or something like that. So.
Okay.
So that's just an FYI. Compliance notices were issued. We issued approximately 41 of them, I believe. We've heard from approximately half of them. Hmm. 12 people have either updated or newly registered and are working with local gov to get their back taxes caught up along with all the penalties and interest that would have complied. Anything before March 2019, they have to work directly with our office because that's when we switched vendors. Four of them were just errors. A couple of them, whoever identified the address got the address wrong. At least one person had not been living in that residence for at least a couple of years. So four were already complied for those reasons. Two no longer in business because they no longer live there. And two have brought themselves up completely compliant at this point. And pretty much the rest of the people that we've been in contact with are pending. Pending in that they reach out to us, and we have directed them to local gov to register and start determining their tax filings, their delinquent tax filings. So that seems to be going pretty well. We've also found a few interesting things where the actual listing or the actual address is not accurate. But through a small bit of sleuthing, we were able to find a different property that actually is also not compliant. So there's going to be another round of notices going out to, I think at this point we have at least three from that list that are either the property is a new person or they had the wrong listing address. And so we'll be sending out notices in the very short term for those, and then depending on what the feedback is from the rest of the people on the list, we'll send out another notice probably next month. And if we don't get any response from that, then I presume that is when we turn it over to the attorneys.
Great.
Other things under this. So obviously we are in the start of the budget season. So I'm in the process of getting the departmental budgets submissions. It's going to take me a bit of time, as it always does, to get all of that stuff into the KBS system. I will be reaching out to both the Common Council President and the Mayor to determine when they would like to have the BEA meeting scheduled. I imagine they will start in approximately 2 to 3 weeks. I already mentioned that the audit's in progress. Just a couple other fun things of note. Actually cut a check for the ladder truck today, and they think they're going to be taking possession of it probably on Thursday of this week. And then the last thing is CEDC reached out to me to help them look at the overall tourism board spend and make sure that we're all in alignment in terms of reconciliation. So we'll be working on that later in the week.
Heather?
Any questions on any of that?
Yes, Heather. Is there any chance you could have that last item done for Thursday night's tourism board meeting?
That's the point. Yep. That is the plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else on that?
Nope. Not for me. Anybody else? Questions? Please continue.
Okay. And now just some of the usual stuff. So you can see, and darn it, I had all of these notes, but I left them at the office. But I'll see if I can remember in terms of comparisons, because we talked about comparing some of these things to 2020 may be deceptive because 2020 was obviously during the throes of the pandemic, so a lot of these may be deflated. So you can see we're at pretty good numbers versus the budget year to date. I apologize, I did not change that 58.8%. I will correct that and before I issue it. But still looking pretty strong against budget, and I did go and check some of the 2019-2018 numbers to see how different they were. On off-street parking is still a little higher than it was in those years, but we also increased some fees, so I think that looks basically kind of flat. Front Street Municipal Lot is continues to be low, so even though it doesn't look bad against 2020, I believe in 2019 we were somewhere around $115,000 through August, as opposed to where we are now, 75. So that just continues to confirm that that revenue scheme is not coming back quickly. Parking and other permits is roughly flat, I believe. And then we just look at the year-to-year comparisons again, kind of exactly what I just said. I did note a couple of them here. So Front Street, we're currently at 75 through August. In 2019, we were at 175. So there's $100,000 lost in 8 months. And then parking tickets, we're still looking strong because we were at 228 in 2019, and we're already 274. So again, part of that are the fee increases, but it's also just been pretty strong consistently. Building permits and fees, kind of the same story. I don't remember there being a significant amount of difference between the permits from 2019 to 2021, but I can double check obviously for next month. And again, looking strong against budget and pretty good against a year ago. And nothing changed on this, but I did add the year-to-date comparison through August, which we did not have before on this. So you can see that our sales tax contribution for the first quarter of 2020 was $419,000, and 2021 was $585,000. So that's a significant difference. Mortgage tax, again, over twice as high as it was before. And lodging tax is actually up 158% over the prior year. So that is all very good news. I think most people anticipate sales tax, this sales tax trend to continue. But obviously, what happens with the, you know, the Delta variant and various other COVID things. But overall, really good news from that front. And that is all I have for you today. So unless you have any other questions on those last numbers or anything else you'd like to ask, I'm good to go.
Questions from the council? Anyone? Or those on Zoom? Can you take your screen down, Tiffany? I mean, Heather, so I can see the Zoom people? Ah, there we go. There seems to be a question from Bill.
Yeah, I'm curious, Heather, if the public can check if a property in town is registered as an Airbnb.
Yes. You would just have to... You can just call our office with the property address and we will tell you.
Okay, so it's not listed somewhere on the on your web page?
It is not. It's something we could consider doing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And there's a question from John Kane.
I'm sorry, this is not for Heather, but Tom, I don't know if you're aware. I'm not sure if I'm the only person, but I'm having a lot of trouble with your audio in particular. I don't know what the audio setup is in there, and I know it's your first day, but it's not, you're not coming very clearly at all.
Okay, thank you for that. We'll try to figure it out. I'll try to speak a little louder. Maybe that'll help.
Rebecca has her hand.
Oh, Rebecca. Sorry. Oh, what the heck happened there?
Hey, yeah. I just wanted to follow up on the question Bill just asked. I think that would actually be a great, really useful tool to have just the registry on the city website, because I do receive questions frequently from constituents and also just residents in other wards asking me whether I know whether a particular property is registered or not. And it would be really useful just to be able to direct them to the city website. So.
Okay, yeah, I think I agree. I think that's a good idea. We will do that. It will obviously be just limited to the address. There's other, obviously, private information that we collect that can't be shared. But I agree, having a list of the registered addresses available on city website would be very useful. We should be able to make that happen very soon.
Great.
I'm sorry, Tiffany, can you repeat that?
I understand that it's a good idea. I don't know if it's a violation of some type of privacy, but my question is, are you receiving calls, Heather, just pertaining to what Rebecca Wolf said, you know, about she gets questions from her constituents. Maybe she didn't know that you have that information. Is that what it is, that people just don't know that you can receive that information from the treasurer's office?
No, I think they call me.
I want the answer from the treasurer, please.
Oh, sure.
I do not know the answer to that, Tiffany, to be honest with you. I mean, we do not get a whole lot of calls. We get calls about compliance and things like that, but we don't get a lot of calls of people saying, is this property listed or not? What we do get, though, fairly frequently, is people FOIAing for the list, which I presume they're doing for the same reason. And that's a good example of finding a balance between public information and privacy, because what we have to be careful of is that we are providing the relevant information, but not providing them, for example, like they can have the listing information, but we won't provide the mailing information because we don't want people to be foiling it and then, you know, spamming them for services.
Exactly, and other reasons as well.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Heather, very much. Heather, are you going to stick around for when those resolutions come up in case there's any more questions about them?
If you would like me to, I certainly will.
Thank you. It won't be too long from now.
Okay.
Next up is the chief. Chief Moore.
Hang on, here we go. Here I am, can you see me?
Oh, yeah. Loud and clear.
Chief, you what? Fire chief or police chief?
No, I meant you, chief. Police chief.
Good afternoon, everybody. First, I'd like to start with the mandatory reporting. I'm getting some kind of noise there. Anyway, for August of 2021, we had one use of force incident in the department. There was no intervention in this matter. In this incident, a subject was arrested, and one of our officers was injured and was off duty for a week. We compiled 50 arrests with 32 total charges over the course of the month, which is low for an August, the summer month. We dealt with 8 emotionally disturbed people. We had 1 drug overdose, which the subject died. There was no, we did not administer Narcan in August. That's in writing and has been supplied, hopefully, to all the officials, and on the back has a breakdown of the individual charges. The department had an intensive recruiting drive for a police officer's examination, which is this Saturday, the 18th. We had 32 individuals sign up to take the police exam, which I think is an excellent number. I was looking online today and I saw the Times Union reported on May 28th that the entire Albany County had only 13 sign up for the police officer's position. So 32 just for the city of Hudson, and 13 for all of Albany County. I thought we did really well with that. So we'll look to see how many show, how many pass the test, and when they establish the civil service list. We've been addressing some concerns of citizens in the boulevards regarding traffic violations. And last month, 2 stop signs were installed, one at Oakdale and Paddock, the other one at Oakdale and Parkwood. And we're receiving some favorable feedback that has done some traffic calming. There's a citizen list, some citizens have sent us other recommendations that we're working on up in the boulevards that involve crosswalks and stop sign by the youth, by Oakdale, by the youth department. So we're just going down the list. I'll be working with DCW to see which of these recommendations are even doable, necessary, or able to be done. But if it can be done and it improves public safety up in the boulevards, we will address it. We had our department CPR training today, and I've asked to be included on a multidisciplinary team to address the situation, primarily in the park, but throughout the city of Hudson, that has emotionally disturbed people, vexing the system for Greenport Rescue and EMS. The concern here of public safety is that multiple ambulances have been dispatched for emotionally disturbed people that really don't require medical treatment. And then that's tying up valuable ambulance time, police time, that might be called away for more serious accidents. So the EMS folks have some issues there. I have some issues there with tying up valuable resources. So this team is made up, and they've been meeting. I've asked to be included. I think I will be. It involves the head of the psychiatry unit at CMH and some EMS officials. So I look forward to coming up with some short-term solutions to address it. I've been working with the city attorney, Greenberger, a task force, but I believe that that's more long-term solutions on issues involving emotionally disturbed people. So in order to get something going before the bad weather and try to address it, I'm hoping that this team can come up with some solutions.
That's all. Crisis. Unit that is not around anymore?
Yeah, I'm sure that, yeah, we call them. The problem is a lot of times, Tiffany, the subject requests an ambulance and wants to be evaluated, or they claim they have some kind of injury, so physical injury, so the ambulance is automatically dispatched. So it's a problem, so we're working on it. Most of the people, you know, it's almost said homeless, most of the people that we encounter, and they are actually have housing, the problem goes beyond what's been provided to them. It's something we're going to have to deal with, but hopefully we can get something going here before the weather gets bad. That's all I have right now, Mr. President.
Thank you. Questions from council members? Rebecca.
I'm sorry, could you just clarify? You were saying that these are not necessarily people who are unhoused, but they're people who are having like a mental event, but they're feeling like it's physical, or they, so like people having panic attacks, that kind of thing?
No, a lot of times it's drunkenness. A lot of times there is no real injury. These folks, for the most part, it's, you know, there's six that we identify routinely, have been provided housing. They have a place to go where it's warm and they can have a shower, but they decide not to. Sometimes sleeping all night in the park or in an alleyway. And then what happens is our officers will encounter them for some kind of violation. It's something as small as an open container or something like a stay away order of protection. They'll encounter them, and then the person will have a physical injury of some sort that they'll request an ambulance. He or she will request an ambulance. And sometimes they do. Sometimes they're an alcohol problem or a drug problem. But for the most part, they're either treated and released, or they are brought to the hospital and leave on their own volition. And it's a real problem because these EMS, these paramedics are valuable, and you're tying them up if there's a major accident somewhere, the response could be delayed. So it's something we have to address.
So what ideas do you have?
Well, I just asked to join this team. I mean, what I've been working on with Cheryl and the team is the Greenberger solution, which is a care facility to be built, and a whole new policy on emotionally disturbed people. The problem is that's not going to help us before the cold weather sets in. So we have to maybe look for some even temporary solutions to try to address the problem. And I think everyone that lives in Hudson sees the problem, and the court system isn't the answer. Some of these people have been, you know, multiple arrests, multiple pending cases, and a violation for open container or sleeping on a park bench or public, you know, drunkenness or something. It's not a solution. So it's something we all recognize needs to be, when I'm out and about, people are always pointing out the issue with these folks that are either sleeping in the park or on the park or park bench. You know, we're just looking to get some new ideas.
Okay. Sam Rudin, any other council members first? Questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
What's the name of that medication that's used for a potential overdose?
Narcan.
Is it possible, Chief, that you can set up a day for training for the community, or another day for the council members? And would we have access to that, so we can have, like, how can we as council members have that? Just in case, because I know there was an incident in the second ward where I had to call the police, and I was given that Narcan, but I couldn't get it open.
We'll have a training here at the station. Anyone that wants to come.
Okay, can you let the council know when?
Yeah, we just resupplied with Narcan. I think we have a pretty good supply on hand. And I will definitely report back to you for that. That's easy. It's an easy drug to administer, and we'll definitely have some physical structure.
Thank you.
Yep.
Sam Rodens has a question.
Hi, guys. Yeah, this is Sam from the Register Star. Chief, I had a question. How many times had EMS been dispatched to people having a mental event, as you're describing?
Hi, Sam. This came to a head about 3 weeks ago, where an EMS official contacted me and said, hey, do you know that one particular person had 13 ambulance dispatches for him alone over a 2 or 3 week period, and that was excessive, and what can you help us, or what can you do? And this is an issue, you know. Let's suppose you find someone like this and we make the call that the ambulance isn't needed, and it turns out that there was an underlying problem that caused the person to be injured or injured more or die. Everyone's nervous about making that kind of call at the scene. If the person says, I have shortness of breath, or my heart, I have tightness in my chest, and this is the kind of complaints we were getting. But what really brought it to a head was the fact that we had one individual, I mean, think about it, 13 times the paramedics had the role, 13 times the person's welfare was checked, they were brought to the hospital, and only for the person to walk out or be immediately discharged, you know, that's a problem. That ties up precious resources. So, I would say the timeline on that was about 3 weeks ago. It was brought to my attention 2 or 3 weeks ago. And now we're starting to talk about what we can do.
Thank you, Chief. Any other questions? Okay, moving on. From the public, Bill, keep it short. Shaheem, can you be prepared here, please?
Chief, I noticed a couple of weeks ago, on two occasions, during the film shoot that was going on in town, that your officers in their idling vehicles were blocking traffic from getting at the shoot, either in the alleys or in the street. And I'm just wondering, if you can tell us how much time HPD devotes to that, and like how many officers were involved, if you can give us a general idea of what's going on there.
I think that one company, which the HBO Pretty Little Liars shoot, has been in town three times, actually twice, over by Charles Williams School twice, and then on Warren Street a third time. We detailed two officers to that, and the company is paying us. We bill them for the overtime for the officers. I don't have the numbers right on me, but we bill them because the officers are working on overtime.
Okay.
Is that considered a law enforcement? I mean, is that a wise use of our officers?
Bill. Come on.
Okay, I just got one other question quick. Is drinking of alcohol allowed in any of the parks, specifically 7th Street Park, where it happens pretty often, whether the person is drinking from the bag or not?
The person drinking from the bag at the park, alcohol is a violation of city code.
And so I'm curious why your officers aren't or pursuing that or enforcing that. It seems
they do often.
Okay. Unfortunately, there's a lot of pending actions right now in court for the same individuals being ticketed for open container or drinking alcohol.
But is that what an open container is? I thought open container was with no bag.
The bags are relevant. It doesn't matter if it's in the bag or not. When you buy liquor in a liquor store, they require that you bag it to walk. That's a different statute. But if your person's drinking a beer in the park, that's the violation, whether it's in a bag or not.
Okay. And is it not?
Last question, Bill.
People that have so many violations in okay. Street Park, especially, is it not possible to ban them? Ban these people from the park?
I think there's no ordinance.
No, it's not possible.
There would have to be some kind of law that would allow that, Bill. We can't, once they have to have their time in court, and some of them are going to have a lot of time in court answering a lot of summonses.
I just want to say one last thing. This morning at approximately 9:15, I was on working on Park Place. I walked past one of the newly painted park benches along the sidewalk. There were three gentlemen, men on it that you're aware of, I'm aware of, some of the regulars. One had a bottle of vodka or gin, no bag on it. There were two guys were drinking from it. And they also had two cans of beer. I wish that HPD would do more patrols, more enforcement of the 7th Street Park. It's getting out of hand.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
I'd like to respond.
Sure, Chief.
And, you know, we have done that, Bill. Listen, everyone knows it's a problem. It's clear that the court system is not going to be the solution. They get ticketed over and over again, sometimes misdemeanors. They're back out in the park before we're done with the paperwork. Is that why?
Bill. No, that's it.
We write them all the time, Bill. We've got them all the time. It's a lesson in futility if you keep doing it and keep doing it. The problem here is dealing with emotionally disturbed people. And as I reported, we're going to be part of a team to try to address this and hopefully have some results, especially before the cold weather. I have one more thing, Mr. President, too, if I could add.
Certainly. What, Chief?
This weekend, Saturday, I invite everybody to our Pinewood Derby. Starts at 2 o'clock. Racing begins at 3, and there's hot dogs and hamburgers, and it's free to come. For the kids.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thanks, everybody.
Did you say something, Tiffany?
What time is the event? Oh.
2 o'clock weigh-in. 2 o'clock weigh-in. The cars. 3 o'clock. The races begin. Hot dogs and hamburgers.
Okay. Barring further questions, thank you, Chief Moore. We're moving on to DPW. Rob, are you there?
I'm here, Roger. Let me do the old share screen thing in the jigger.
Okay.
And here we go. Okay, ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so Stephanie's revenue for July was over $55,000. That is our highest month on record. We have had a couple extra companies over the past year, so we're starting to see that business up. In 2011, the sewer plant was built down at South Front Street. We had a $3 million fare at South Front Street pump station, another $9.5 million of the plant at Front Street. And that was 10 years ago. So we're starting to see a lot of equipment that's just aging out for being in operation, continuously over a decade of serious flows. We average about 650 million gallons a year through the sewer plant. So it's easy to see how lots of pumps and processes are running over that 10-year span. Just some examples. In this year, this fiscal year, we've replaced a main influent pump, a secondary pump, some drives and shafts that are belt press conveyor. There's these flights, change flights that basically, skim the stuff that floats off the top and scoop the stuff that sinks to the bottom. Things like that, grit conveyors, which is the stone and the aggregate that's in suspension and gets pulled out. Our muffin monster, which is the product that's on the septic receiving station. And all told, we spent about $75,000 just selling, pretty expensive pumps and processes. And, we expect that to continue for the next couple of years because the beauty of when you have a new plant is that everything is new all at the same time. The problem is that everything kind of ages out at exactly the same time. We're starting to see an uptick in pump replacements. Picture number one, this is picture two here. This is the conveyor system. So the polymerized sludge comes out, drops through any one of these chutes into the tractor trailer to get pulled away from the same area. So this is down at the South Front Street pump station. We had an issue where the pumps were going offline. This cable which is probably like about 10 or 12 feet, and there's actually some smaller cable and a kind of a ball over here, almost, I don't know what it was, like a cannon ball. It wasn't steel, but it was, I don't know, maybe like a small bowling ball. Anyway, these are the kinds of things that make their way in the collection system, believe it or not, and actually make their way into our pumps and process. So, you know, once we cleared this from the pump worked fine, thankfully, but there's a lot that makes its way into the, that lot, you know, a lot of really big stuff, surprisingly, makes its way down in there. The EPG grant, which is the environmental planning grant, we are beginning to work on that. I think we have all the executed paperwork between EFC and the city. So, you know, one of the first places we're doing is trying to address or identify the causes of a lot of overflows down across street, because this is, what this is showing is flow coming, come this way down from the city down Front Street, and there's two sewer main, one existing and one new one, that then take it to the pump station. This is a storm line that comes in afterward. Anyway, so we get a lot of overflows here at this overflow weir, which is like a dam. And it's a bit, you know, perplexing, because there's an overflow down here at the pump, is a cross section of the wet well at the pump station, and they're both at the same elevation, so this one hardly never overflows. We're trying to establish why this one is and the other one isn't. You know, so part of the EPG grant is to do some modeling to figure out what other characteristics might be at play, and so we can get address that and start reducing some of these CSOs. The water, we have the PRV. This has been installed at the front of the plant. We have, so here is a T coming off of the valve, coming off of the main. This is the PRV itself. And when it opens up to relieve back pressure from the processes in the water plant, it just discharges into this pipe here, which goes into this catch basin. So we formed it out, and concrete was poured, and once the concrete cures, we'll remove the form and pretty much close this project out. So, water. The lead service line, replace the project. We are preparing documents to go to the Department of Health for review. This project is also intertwined with a WIA, which is a water infrastructure grant for the 12-inch water main. The two separate projects, two different agencies, two different sets of requirements. You know, we want to put them out as one bid. You know, obviously they get some economies of scale, but there's, you know, there's, when you double the bureaucracy, you know, it's actually like a quadruple, really. It's a factor more than just double. But those should be submitted next week, and we'll get, you know, we want to keep this project moving forward. Back a couple of years ago, there was some frozen pipes in the house of the resident at the water plant. And so we, you know, we had to go back and forth with the insurance company, you know, what was and wasn't needed to be replaced and so forth. So what we did was we closed that out, and so we have $75,000 to cover the repairs of the water damage. There was damage to the kitchens and plumbing. A lot of mechanicals have to be replaced, so it's, we just have to put a, you know, receive it, and we'll get working on getting repairs. The shifting to what are we saying here? EPW. So more catch basin work. This is all largely because of the CHIPS project that we intend to do this fall. So we're going on to get as much of the infrastructure upgraded and prepared as possible before we put a new road down. So this one is over on Prospect Street. You can see there's an entire pallet of brick that was used. So, I mean, some of these repairs are, you know, can be costly. I think it's $1.50 a brick, so you probably have about $600 worth of brick here, plus the concrete and other materials. Sitting here, this one's on Green Street, repairing a broken catch basin. Let's see, excavation. Oh, so this is just the new water service for the dog park. So the crew excavated to the wet tap, installed some copper. We did get a trenching machine loaned to us from Cal Russo that we mounted to our skid steer. So that work has been done, and I believe there's a contractor who's finishing the project on behalf of the dog park. Just kind of a brief thing for the Promenade Hill. Part of the Department of Justice order of consent was to make the Promenade Hill ADA compliant. So these are actual measurements of the board ramps that are in place, and they all are within compliance. So this was a quick schematic that was put forth to send to DOJ. So probably one of the least enjoyable experiences I've ever had working for the city, maybe in my life, was going up the steeple to the city clock at the Presbyterian Church. And I can tell you that it's an awful, awful place to go. These are original. They were built, remember, the steeple was built a couple hundred years ago. They're teeny little steps. You have to kind of hold on to a beam here, or a board there, and shimmy your way up and over onto these tiny little landings that are just filthy. And, you know, like I said, that's pretty steep going in. There's a little tiny railing over here, which isn't much of anything. So after making those climbs up and up and up, you know, this is the winding machine, if you will. Who knows how old that is, but at some point the city installed this electric motor, so this electric motor actually engages here. It actually was a hand crank back in the day, and you see it turns, you guys hear the cable gets pulled up, and it pulls these counterweights. So these are a series of weights that actually run, it takes, I guess, 8 to 10 days for them to run their all the way before they hit bottom out. So like it was like every 8 to 10 days, the clock has to be running. It was about 100 degrees up there. I was filthy when I came out and dripping wet and not enjoyable at all. So by all means, anybody who would love to have a job winding the clock at the church, please see me. waste collection. Just a special note. Now, for those of you who have been here for a while, when I say a while, I mean like, you know, more than 6 months. You know, the city started recycling as part of state law in 1988 under Governor Barry Cuomo. And, you know, back in the days, we had 2 days for recycling. Went just like we do for a garbage pickup. The south side of the city was one day, the north side was another day. When in 2012, the county moved to a single stream process, which meant that you could co-mingle plastics and so we didn't need the old recycling truck with separate bins. We could throw it together in one garbage truck, bring it out there, and then they bring it to a sorting facility up in Vermont. But that only worked fine up until COVID, when half of New York City moved to Hudson full-time, and everybody changed their purchasing habits by, instead of going out, you know, to shopping malls and stores, they had everything shipped. So what used to be about 5 ton of cardboard a week is now 10 to 12 ton of cardboard a week. And, you know, of course, the restaurants are very busy, which we're happy to support them. Which means on Wednesday, we're doing another 5 or so ton just in Warren Street support. So, part of it all is that as of January, for the water bills will be going out with a new schedule. We'll be reverting back to a 2-day recycling schedule instead of doing it all in one day. So it'll be Monday, garbage south side, Tuesday, garbage north side, Wednesday, recycling south side, Thursday, recycling north side. So if you live on the north side, you'll have experienced no change, and those south of Warren Street will put the recycling out on Wednesday. It went around like that for years, and just the volume. And we're actually putting 2 crews out with 6 employees, and if you know, it happens to be that only 6 are on that day, then literally nothing else is getting done in the park. We're going to, you know, we just need it for logistics and workshop. Just an update on the Ferry Street Bridge.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
Part of it, is pretty severely wider than what it is now. We have to move a lot of utilities. So these little blue guys here are utility poles. This is where the bridge is. So there's, we're going to have to install new poles and cheat this one over onto Amtrak's property. So part of the right-of-way, you know, we have documents and easements that we have to do a National Grid. But once we get these moves, you know, then we can get the site ready to accommodate the new bridge. We, you know, we're still going through review with DOT. We're still going through review with CSX and Amtrak. You know, I mean, hopefully, yeah, hopefully it's 2022 we can get this in. That's, and this is just a picture of where we're looking at the grades. You're looking at probably a 12% incline from Allen Street, and going down to the river is 14%. Pretty steep. That's why this, the bridge itself will have an arc to it to help facilitate that move. We did resubmit the SHPO documents and the endangered species documents. Those two documents had timed out because of all the delays with the railroad review. So they've been resubmitted. We expect that to go pretty much smoothly because nothing will change. At the cemetery, they're just doing some road repairs. So this is our the drag box in action, I believe. We borrowed this from the county. You can just, pretty low tech. The blacktop goes out. Guys shovel it back and forth to get it level. And then the truck pulls forward and leaves a little trail behind. And that's what it has. You know, obviously they came back afterwards and did this track here, did this track, and filled them. So, you know, it looks like a solid piece. But, you know, it used to be we could put use, there was a time when we could use CHIPS money to do repairs in the cemetery because they, the previous superintendent back in the 90s, had them all marked out and added to the city's street inventory. In about 2013-14-ish, DOT did an audit and found that, you know, these aren't, they don't meet any of the requirements of the actual city street because one of the things, of course, because it closes at night and city streets can never close. We lost about 30% of our fixed reimbursement. And so any of the repairs that actually are being done is probably have to come out of the cemetery. One of the services, if you ever hear anybody say about foundations, where you see all those the stones that, you know, sit up all nicely, you have to excavate down about 4 feet. This is, you know, they're specific to the dimension, the footprint of the headstone. And we pour up the concrete, and then once the concrete cures, then the bulk comes and puts this up. The reason you see a lot of the old cemetery, they're ticked and, you know, is because they used to just put rocks underneath them, and, you know, 200 years later, 150, 100 years later, you know, some brown hog burrowed up through them, or some tree root pushed up through them, and ended up loosening them, and, you know, then they become structurally compromised, and, you know, nature does its thing. So, that, we do about 50 of these excavations every year. We do about 2 or 3 times a year. So, and that's it.
Thank you, Rob. Questions from the council for Rob?
No, just a comment. I want to thank you for getting the crew up to the top of Fairview Avenue to repave that work that had been done that we discussed at our last meeting. There was quite a substantive hole that was starting to burrow its way back down there, and I noticed that in this past week it was recovered, so thank you for having that done, because I have received quite a few inquiries from people in the third ward about that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Rob, can you take down your screen so I can see everyone?
Yeah, how do I, where is it? I'll stop sharing.
Yeah, there you go. Council members, any questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
Or a request, rather. Rob, thank you for all the work that you do and your team and the department. Has come to the attention on that North Second Street in front of, on the side of the city property of the community gardens. There's a piece of furniture.
Excuse me one second. Shaheen, could you turn off the chat? The chat's not supposed to be on. Sorry.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, Tiffany. Go ahead.
I don't know who left it, but now that school has started, it's particularly dangerous of children getting off the bus and someone just so happens to knock it over. So I'm requesting, once your team is out, if they can remove that from blocking the sidewalk. And also in front of the community gardens, as you showed in one of the pictures, if you guys can pour some cement in that one square space that is missing on the sidewalk, so you know people can walk through back and forth properly. Please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Rob. Moving along, Peter Bujano is here to talk about two, one RFP and one RFEI that he's been working on. And
hey, Tom.
Yes.
Just so everyone is aware, Chief Moore had wrote a comment to everyone in the chat room describing what he reported to us is what he's dealing with right now.
Yep. Thank you. Peter, you want to stand over here so the machine picks you up nicely?
Sure.
First, we're... Oh, go ahead.
Yep. So the two projects, the one is, I'll talk about first, is the request for expressions of interest. And I'm here tonight because you haven't gotten the document. And I wanted to come and explain it before you get the document. I've sent it to Tom to review, and he'll pass it along. It's a second draft, and made some modifications to it. One of the biggest issues we had was it was some discrepancy in the mapping from Columbia County versus the Hudson Assessor's data, et cetera, et cetera. So it's always something. And I was able to secure a different map. So let me just back up. So Tom assigned me a project to develop solar farms in the city of Hudson on vacant land in the North Bay area. And he identified two pieces. And when we went to look at those two parcels through Columbia County, the mapping was just not right. And we thought we had it right. We spoke to Columbia County. It didn't get corrected. Subsequently, I received a better map that was put together by Crawford Associates in 2009. And what it does is it's now the now project is one parcel of 95 acres, but the 95 acres are not all usable. Some of it's wetland, a lot of it's wetland because of where it is. But it was the easiest way to identify the project area, because in that project area, the 95 acres, and you'll see this when you get this document, there's a map, and you'll see 95 acres, City of Hudson, it's City of Hudson IDA. So it has two titles to it, and it's described as 95 acres. Within that 95-acre zoning area, the City Comprehensive Plan zoning map, most recent one that I have, indicates that there's three types of zoning in that area. One is recreational use. One is industrial, because there's some brownfield area there, right, where the dog park is, Foster Refrigerator, Mill Street, right, you know that area. And then the other piece is multifamily housing. So within this 95 acres that's owned by the City of Hudson, where we're trying to develop a solar farm, community solar, and whatever benefits we can get from that, there's three types of zoning in there. So what we've done with the new map is, we've identified that, and we've included the comprehensive plan map that shows where the areas are. So it's a smaller area now. It's become a smaller footprint. And it's right near where the dog park is. Part of it is industrial. And then there's a piece where the Arnie Tea Company was, right in that area. So there's some acreage. I can't identify what that acreage is based on the map I have. But we'll have a walkthrough if this goes forward with the developers, and we'll go there and we'll figure it out. In the meantime, if a better map comes along, that can identify what that size is, that's helpful. But we've included the map. We're going to let the developer come. So the request for expression of interest is different than a request for proposals, because we're asking solar developers to come to the city of Hudson, look at the area we've given them as a palette, so to speak, to develop some solar, given those conditions, those unique conditions that exist down there. We also know the elephant in the room is that it's near a capped landfill. This proposal, this request for expressions of interest, I just want to be clear, does not include the area of the landfill which is owned by Columbia County. However, there is some great data that was developed by the United States EPA that gives a lot of data about the sun, the rays, the analytics associated with solar development in that area. I think it's in our best interest to gain the interest of developers to put that data in there, because if they see that data, they know it's a good site, they'll be more interested to come to it. So we've included it in this document as a reference point, but I don't want anybody, I want to make it clear, we're not saying build on the Columbia County property, that's a capped landfill. What we're saying is, here's some data that was collected in 2017, relatively fresh data. Nothing much has changed in there in terms of the analytics. So that's what's going to be in there, so that these developers will look at that data, they'll see it, they'll know what the area is, they'll see if it's feasible. So the idea about this whole thing is, hey developers, we have a project for you, come see it, tell us if you can build something there, give us an idea of what you need, how we can change it. We're also sensitive to the fact that we want to continue building the trail maybe to the Greenport Conservation Area. It shouldn't be on top of the landfill, it's Columbia County property, so it's going to be on the City of Hudson owned property. Somehow, we've included in there that the developers will consider that, as well as pollinators, etc. All those good features we've asked for in the request for expressions of interest.
Peter, thanks for your good work. I'm just confused. So you're using sort of sun exposure data that includes the landfill to try to entice interest in a parcel adjacent to the landfill. It just seems that you get developers who are going to want to come and just say, hey, we want to develop a landfill area included with your
We want to show them a document that's credible, that was prepared by the EPA,
right. That
says this area is ripe for solar, come here.
Meaning the
area.
Right.
And it's clearly identified, it's distinguished in the document.
Right.
That is for reference only.
Okay.
But I think it's important to do that, because absent that, they're going to look at this and there's not going to be much to draw them there. They're looking for...
Well, they want to go this for scale.
If you look at Columbia County, 360 acres, they're looking for prime farm soils. This is a unique... I'm trying to build this as a unique challenge for the developers, but letting them know that somebody identified this area as ripe for solar,
right,
based on the... And it's not just anybody. It's not me saying it. It's the EPA. So that data, I think, is valuable as part of this equation, part of this trying to attract developers to that specific area.
You see my concern about this, though, that even though I know you've addressed... You've already addressed the public concern about it, but just more that we don't get trapped into...
And John, keep in mind, this is just a request for expressions of interest. We're not making... There's no commitments by this. It's a win-win situation. It's basically going to come back with three answers. Yes, we can use it. Yes, we can use it if we do something, if you give us something else, or no, it can't happen. And then we go to the next step. You figure out where else in Hudson. And what we focused on in this model is the industrial area, specifically. It's on the comprehensive plan map. It's the purple zone.
Right.
Not much of it. There's not much of it. The question I have is, whether it's enough to entice somebody to come here. The connectivity is there with the three-phase power in the area, because
right,
the EPA did that study. But what's important is they did an annual review of all the solar, of all the sun, of all the, you know, all the technical information that I'm not an expert in, is in that document. And I think it's important, but it's distinguished. And I want everybody to feel comfortable that it's in there for reference purposes only, and it's stated that way.
Just as a tangent, a few years ago when Tom and I were talking to some different operators, we also just briefly looked at a Hudson Finance project as well, and then that way you go on a smaller footprint of acreage, you know, and maybe, I mean, maybe since the ship is already sailing in this direction, it might not be a thing, but that could be something to ask as well, is just to sort of revive that conversation with a few operators to see what it would cost for us to actually build it, or borrow money to build it, and see how much we could get by selling the power back, et cetera, for that financing, vis-a-vis someone actually coming in and renting, you know, what the lease option we're looking for right now, I should say. Remember that, Tom?
Vaguely,
Sun,
yeah.
Sun Common.
Yeah. Oh, that, yes, I do.
Because they'll, you know, we can find, we borrow money to
build
our lots.
That's actually an idea, John, that, excuse me, CAC is pursuing in terms of, you know, pulling together enough properties, because Sun Common, you know, is talking about spotting it all over
right,
the city.
But
yeah.
Excuse
me.
This is a larger scale. It's not enormous, right? Hudson is 2 square miles, roughly, right? It's a larger scale. It's not all over the city. It's tried to be concentrated in one area. The idea is to get this developer to create community solar and all the benefits that come along with it, not just for them to be a profit margin and that we just get a rental fee payment every month, but it's to encourage participation in the city of Hudson. It's a unique project. I think it's different than most other applications, and we'll see if it's real. We'll see if it has any legs with it if we get some responses to it.
Thank you, Peter. And next week we will vote on issuing this. So that's, you have it, you know, and I'll also have it posted on the website.
Yeah, I think as long as the location of the solar panels, you know, isn't a hindrance to the residents, it's a great idea.
There's limited space in the city to do a larger scale development like that. If you're looking at specifically industrial areas, you know, we thought, when I first got the project, I thought we had a larger palette that we could draw on. But it turned out to be that there's three types of zoning right within this area. And the maps are just not right now. So we're using a 95 acre, but we've identified, we've isolated it to only the industrial area. So when you see this new document, those maps are in there. They're very small, probably harder to read, but it really, I want everybody to know and make it clear that the cap landfill is not in this. Reference to the study that was done in 2017 by EPA, a credible agency. The data there is important for an important part of this, but it's only going to be on the area identified in the industrial zone, and then we'll see if developers feel it's a good plan or not. And so the risk is we put this out, we see what we get back, and we'll have an answer, and then we'll have to reconfigure where you go next.
Great.
After we get it.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay. And the other project, this is a request for proposals. So the former library, this is a request for proposals for feasibility study and adaptive reuse of the former library building. And there's a relationship, and you know it better than I do, with Galvan in terms of donations and that building. And they've offered us, I believe it's $100,000, over $100,000 to study whether that project can become the City Hall. Now, they did their own study, and they created their own drawings, et cetera, that developed that property to become City Hall in its own way. This is taking this from ground zero and starting from fresh. People will know who respond to this that there is that other study out there, but what I'm trying to get is unique, individual, independent views of, take a look at this building, tell us if it's feasible to become City Hall, with the idea of moving all the offices that are in this building, plus code enforcement there. Now, we did John Ellsworth's feasibility study some time ago that had a different footprint, that had a different criteria, that had a different expectation than this one. This is just going to be City Hall proper, what's in this building, plus code enforcement going there. Now, it utilizes, I've been working with Galvin and Chatham. Walter Chatham, who is working with Galvin. He provided me with some drawings that were as current condition of the building. So what this does basically is it's taking that, it's putting a lot of emphasis on the historic nature, that because there are grants and monies available for developing historic buildings. And part of this process is not going to be just say, hey, tell us if this building can be used for City Hall. It's going to be, tell us if it is, tell us, it's not redesigning it, it's not creating a City Hall, it's not saying, give me drawings what it's going to look like. This is basically going to go through it, tell us how much it's going to cost to restore it to a City Hall feasibility. It's a feasibility study, not a design study right now. Part of what this will include, either we get responses back now or a future request for proposals, will be how to finance it. So we want to know, we want somebody to tell us how this feasibility can be accomplished. What pockets of money, what sources of revenue, what sources of funds are available to accomplish the cost that they're going to come back with. They're going to say, hey, this building is historic. It has all these deficiencies to code today. This is what we need to bring it up to code. This is what we propose. This is now how we can finance it. That's always the key component, because people can tell you, you can do it, it'll cost you X million dollars, but they never tell you where the money's going to come from. So what we're going to include here is that component. So at the end of the day, whatever it is, we're going to come up with, this is what the building is, this is what needs to be done, this is how you do it, this is the potential source of funds. Because it has so much history, there's money in the historic piece of it in terms of grants preservation, et cetera. So we're going to capture on that. This is heavy, and you haven't seen it yet maybe, but there's a heavy historic component to this, and you'll see it. And that's what that means. It's trying to draw that in.
Thank you, Peter.
So all I need to do is know when to release it, and you can look at it, and we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, sure.
Any questions for me on that? Feasibility study for
questions from the council.
Yeah,
Jane?
How long do you think that your study for the library into a possible City Hall will take?
The proposal will be about 30 days, right? It'll be about 4 weeks to put this out from the day it's released, the day it comes back. We'll get proposals in terms of how much it's going to cost to do the study. Now, this is just how much it's going to cost to do the study. That result 4 weeks from now, from the date of release, will tell us, that will give us a calendar, it'll give us a schedule on how long it'll take to get that feasibility done.
Okay, so the turnaround for the expression of interest is going to be just 4 weeks?
This is an RFP, different. This is a request for a proposal. So they're going to give us a proposal 4 weeks from now, then there's an interview process, so it might be another week.
Seems like a pretty fast timeline.
Well, it's standard. We have a walkthrough built in. What could happen to slow down is questions could come up. We have a timeline for questions. So it goes out the first week, we ask for questions that come back, we respond to the questions, and then 2 weeks later they give us a proposal. They may say, I need another week or 2 weeks, and then we do an addendum, but typically a 4 week timeline is what we look at to get the proposal on how much it's going to cost to do it and how long it will take to do that study.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Anybody else? No questions? Okay. Moving right along. We're going to go to resolutions with Heather on standby in case there's any questions, because a number of them are generated from her office. So the first resolution is... is this the right one? Yes, a resolution to authorizing the execution of a public employee risk management association workers' compensation program agreement. And there it is. And are there any questions? Attached to the resolution is the our application.
What do we have now? What does this replace potentially?
Heather? Are you there?
Yes. So currently, Columbia County was basically self-insuring their workers' compensation coverage for themselves and all the participating municipalities. This is, for lack of a better phrase, farming it out to PERMA.
Oh.
So the council, the county has made the decision. They've already made the move. Anyone that wants to continue coverage, workers' comp coverage, with the county, which I absolutely recommend you do, just needs to join as an individual municipality.
All right, thanks.
Do you, any other questions?
Welcome.
Do I have an introduction? Jane? And a second? Dewan. Thank you. This next one is a resolution authorizing a loan from the general fund to the capital fund for the purchase of fire department equipment. This one is rather self-evident. Any questions, Ryan? Oh, you're introducing it?
Yeah.
And Dewan. Thank you. The next is authorizes a budget transfer to cover employer-paid health care deductibles, which is also, I think, fairly self-evident. Do I have an introduction? Ryan? And a second? Shersha. Thank you, sir. The next resolution is authorizing a contract to provide phone service to the new code enforcement office. Is it a question or a?
No, thanks, I would introduce it.
Okay, Jane, in a second, go on. And the next resolution are some of these incidental one-time expenses for the move. Introduction? Ryan, and a second, Dewan. The next resolution authorizes the transfer of funds within the legal accounts. I think Heather explained this earlier on.
Yeah.
Can I have an introduction, Ryan, and a second, Shersha. And last resolution for us to pay the deductible involved with an insurance claim. Any questions? Okay, an introduction, please. Go on. And a second. Ryan, thank you. Okay. We're just going to have we need an introduction. We need an introduction for another local law establishing 25-mile speed limit on certain streets in the city of Hudson. So this will begin the process.
That's for the Glass Boulevard,
right? I'm sorry, could you say it louder, please?
That's for the Glass Boulevard? Glenwood, I mean.
Oh, Glenwood, yes. Yeah. We've identified Glenwood first, and then we can add other streets subsequently.
We don't know the others to do it, just the Glenwood now, right?
Yes, just Glenwood now, just to keep it simple and get it moving, because that's, you know, a crisis area. Can I have an introduction? Dewan and Ryan, a second. Okay, let's see. And, of course, all the other laws are still on your desk. That's a bit for official business. Is there any comments or questions from the council first?
I would like to know about the email that I sent to Jeffrey Baker about the name changing and honoring our former council members. I saw it on Classics of Rivertown.
I'm sorry, you what?
I saw an article about it on Classics of Rivertown, so I'm wondering Jeff made it
a low priority right now because Jeff is working rather diligently on a couple other local laws, especially the cause for eviction law, which, you know, needs a lot of revision, a lot of changes. And so Jeff has been doing extensive research on that. After that, he is also working on an idling law, which also requires some extensive research to get it into shape for us to consider. When he is finished with those two, then he will get to that proposed change.
Okay. Well, thank you. And Jeff, you know, I'm glad that you're doing the work for the good cause eviction and the other one that Tom just mentioned, because the resolution is really just basically simple, right? The name changing.
Is it a simple thing, Jeff?
Well, I have to, you know, review the, you know, and copy a lot of the Albany law. I looked at it briefly, and, you know, it's not that much work to put together. It's a two-step process, though, Tiffany. It's adopting the law and then going forward through the process in that law to decide who to name. So it's not a one-step thing. If I remember correctly, but I have to go back.
I didn't hear you. You said it's not a bunch of steps?
I don't think it's a one-step process. I think we have to adopt the law first, and then with the process set forth in the law, you nominate streets to be named, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we usually do, right? We put forward the law, we vote, and then you work on it, and then, right? So we
do. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions or comments?
Rebecca.
Oh, thanks for pointing that out, Jeff. I forgot to look. Rebecca.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the list the inclusionary zoning law also is being worked on, and also the sidewalk law.
I wasn't suggesting they aren't being worked on. I was just explaining the priority of the laws already on the agenda.
Yeah.
But those are being worked on too. You're right. You are correct. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else? It's that moment.
Motion for a
Dewan, you want to say it a little louder, please?
Motion for
a second. Jane, second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose?
I oppose. There's a community cleanup day tomorrow, and that will take place within the second ward. So I hope any of you that are available to please join. Thank you.
Okay, since you oppose, I guess we have to have a roll call vote. In favor of would you like to withdraw your objection, or should we go through a roll call vote?
I'll withdraw my objection.
Well, thank you very much, Tiffany. That'll save us a little bit of time. And those of you who introduce or second in, please come up and sign the documents. Thank you all. See you next week.
So we're doing next week just on Zoom?
Yeah. Oh, I should have. Too late. I don't know.
Good night.
Yeah.